Hi, everybody, and welcome to your next great read from the Yoki Bookcast. I'm Jay Hall, and I'm on a mission to connect you with your next favorite book, and that's what this show is all about. We're going to be talking about books we love and giving you reasons to love them, too. The goal of the conversation is to introduce you to a ton of great books and hopefully connect you with a few that you can't wait to read. So, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, author, screenwriter, and favorite oldest daughter, Hannah Herron. Hannah, what's up?
What's up, guys?
So, you just finished a very quick conversation with your mom, who just finished reading Iron Flame and has lots to talk about.
Lots to talk about, as we all do at the end of that book. So, we'll just consider this a safe support group type place. If you need to talk about the end of Iron Flame, I'm down. I'm not over it yet. So, let's talk it out.
I've not read Iron Flame. I have no idea what you're talking about, and that's okay. We've got a guest today. Our guest is Grace Filer. Grace, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into the conversation, Grace, you lead a book club in Oklahoma City called If Books Could Thrill. Tell us about that.
Yes. First, thank you both so much for having me here. I'm really excited to talk about everything. We actually just had our book club meeting last night, and a bunch of our members were very excited to come up with all of the things I could share about book club with you all. So we are based in Oklahoma City, and we predominantly read mysteries and thrillers. And we're called If Books Could Thrill because we had to have a play on words. So we started as a suspense book club hosted by Word of Mouth Books. And then when they unfortunately closed, we didn't want to stop meeting. So we worked with our new flagship bookstore, Literati Press, and they provide a 20% monthly book selection discount for anyone who's interested in joining. And then we meet at different Oklahoma City businesses on the third Saturday of every single month. So now I'm going to get to the fun stuff that everyone else mentioned. To better work with everyone's schedules, we switch every other Saturday between doing a brunch meeting at 10 a.m. or an evening meeting at 6. And so we've gotten to try some like restaurants and breweries and all sorts of really great places. We've read new books, made new friends, and we're always hoping for new people to add to the conversation. And then we also have a group Discord that we use to chat about the book while we're reading. And it's just a really accessible way for people who maybe can't make it in person to every single meeting to still chat about the book that they like. Nice. Or don't like in some cases. So our February book is How Can I Help You by Laura Sims. And the first sentence of the blurb for that book is the lives of two librarians become dangerously intertwined in this razor sharp exploration of human nature and the lure of artistic obsession. So we're meeting at the downtown library for that one. It was perfect. That's If Books Could Thrill. We're always happy to have more members.
Well, Hannah, that sounds like the kind of thing that you might be interested in being in the middle of.
100%. The whole time I'm thinking, yeah, I could jump in on that sometime. That sounds so much fun.
And Grace, if people wanted to get connected with If Books Could Thrill, what's the best way to do that?
The best way to contact us is through Instagram. We are at If Books Could Thrill OKC.
Perfect. And we'll make sure to link that up in the show notes so you can find the book club and talk about all things mystery and thriller with friends. Hannah, give us a quick rundown of the format.
All right, guys. So today we are going to talk about books in three rounds. The first round is we're going to be talking about a book that we are currently reading and give you some early impressions on it. Next, we will talk about two books that we've read in the last month or so and give you a quick review and recommendation on those. We'll end our conversation with our backlist pick, and this is one book each from a pre-assigned category that has to have been released at least 5 years ago. So let's go ahead and kick off round one. Grace, why don't you tell us about what you are currently reading?
Yeah, so I'm currently reading a couple of books at the same time, but I wanted to add a little bit of variety to the genres that I'm recommending to you all. So I'm going to recommend or talk about the nonfiction book that I'm reading right now. It's a memoir by the author of Hamnet, Maggie O'Farrell, and it's called I Am, I Am, I Am, 17 Brushes with Death.
Oh, wow.
In this book, Maggie is discussing the different times that she has experienced a near-death experience, or if she's been near one, so it might be her own, or if it's like a child's or a friend's. It's already a really cool concept for a memoir, but what makes it stand out even more as a creative memoir is that every single brush with death is told in relation to a certain body part. So there's a vignette in it titled Lungs, where she talks about her younger self jumping into a very large body of water on a dare in the middle of the night, and sort of just how terrifying that experience was for her. So far, I've been really enjoying it, and I've been savoring every story she tells. And instead of finishing it all in one sitting, I've kind of been making myself stop after two. The writing is just beautiful, and the way she addresses those experiences is really thought-provoking. I will say, because this does pertain to near-death experiences, there's a significant amount of trauma that is discussed, talking about violence, illness, complications with motherhood, and a couple other things. I haven't finished it yet, so I can't tell you all of them. It's a little heavier of a read, but it's beautifully done, and I already am recommending it to everyone.
I have been getting into nonfiction just very recently. I've read a couple memoirs. I read a few in 2023, and it's kind of got me back on that kick of wanting to read more nonfiction. And I connected so much with what you were saying about, like, these stories of real people are so beautifully written and impactful in a way that's different from fiction, because this is her actual life. Like, these are her actual stories. And so when you can connect to something that is real, like, that has an even larger impact sometimes than, like, when we connect with these fictional characters and stuff. So I've really been enjoying that experience lately, which makes me really want to pick this one up so that I can have that experience with this book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Hannah, what are you reading?
Kind of started this conversation last month. I was reading the very first book in the series of A Court of Thorns and Roses, and I'm now on the third book, Court of Wings and Ruin. Last time we talked, I gave the first book a little bit of a mixed review, and I feel like a very stupid person for doing that now. So here's what happened, and everyone told me this is what's going to happen, and so if I sound like a broken record, I apologize, but the first half of that first book is slow. I still stand by that, but I was judging it too quickly because it was slow. High fantasy, especially high fantasy series, they're going to take a while to set up. And it did. And then I got to about the last quarter of that book, and it was amazing. It finally just kind of picked up, and it hasn't stopped since. I'm almost done with the third one, which means I've read quite a bit of the series at this point.
Oh, wow.
It has not calmed down. Again, just to give you a little bit of the rundown of the kind of story that this is, I don't want to give too much information because, of course, I'm on the third book and I would be spoiling a lot of things for you if I told you exactly what's going on right now. But this is taking place in a fantasy world where humans and fairies are kind of coexisting, not really peacefully, though. And it's in a world where everything is divided into different realms, different courts. And so the humans and fae are all kind of politically warring. This third book in particular, it's been absolutely incredible. It's definitely been the most conflict heavy of the book so far. We're really kind of picking up on the actual, like, political unrest and how that's going to, you know, of course, get into physical violence. But also the relationships are at such a point and the friendships are at such a point that that is playing very heavily into the conflict as well. It's fantastic, guys. I mean, if you've been told, oh, just get through that first book, just get through the first book. Yes, please do. Just get through the first book. It's so worth it. The second book was probably my favorite one so far. It's just an absolutely fantastic series. And I'm only a little over halfway through the series. So maybe check back in next month. Maybe I'll tell you how I feel after the final book. But that's where I'm at. So Court of Wings and Ruin by Sarah J. Maas.
For somebody who has blown through Fourth Wing and Iron Flame, if you're looking for the next series to get into, is this it?
Yes, 100%. So that's actually, I mean, that's why I picked this one up. We call it the Iron Flame hangover. I was very sad after I finished that book and needed something else that was taking place in a similar kind of story world with similar kinds of characters that could help cure that a little bit. This definitely is that series. And the good news is this one's already completed. So you won't have, you know, cliffhangers that then you have to wait for months and months for the next book to come out kind of situation. You can have that kind of finality, that resolution a little bit quicker. I've also heard the Crescent City series, which I haven't started yet, but that's also on my list, also by Sarah J. Maas. I've heard that's another good one to follow up Fourth Wing and Iron Flame.
I see ACOTAR everywhere.
It is omnipresent right now.
All right, Dev, why don't you tell us about what you are currently reading?
As I have said here many times to great eye rolls from certain members of my family, I am a huge fan of science fiction from the 40s and 50s through the early 70s, but that kind of golden age of science fiction. And I just read somehow for the first time a book called Day of the Triffids by John Wyndham, which is considered a classic, both the novel, which was written in 1951, and the film that was done about 4 or 5 years later. I'm not sure exactly when. A couple of things to just set it up. So it's set in London in the 50s. Two big events happen, not simultaneously, but close enough to each other that they kind of spin the book off. The first is the discovery of these plants called triffids that produce an oil that is more favorable than other kinds of things that are being cooked with. And so they start to be harvested and grown and treated as an agricultural crop. And then people find out two very important things about these plants. One is that they have a stinger on them that they can whip out 10 feet and it kills people if they hit them. And the second thing is they can uproot and walk. So you have this world where there are plants that can kill you and are mobile. I see that look on your face, Anna. stay with me.
I'll tell you thinking after you finish your speech.
I can't wait. So they're mobile and they can kill you, but they are valuable. And so people figure out that they can remove the stingers and they can literally chain them down where they can't get up and walk around. And so they continue to harvest and use these plants for agriculture. That's the first thing. That's been going on for a couple of years when a comet passes over Earth that lights the sky up in this like brilliant green and everybody all over the world can see it. And they're told, hey, go outside, check this thing out. It's unbelievable, right? Those two things happen. Then we get to the beginning of the book. The book begins with a man named Bill lying in a hospital bed with bandages over his eyes because he has actually been attacked by one of these plants and they were afraid he'd lost his sight. So his eyes are bandaged. He wakes up in a hospital bed and there's no one to help him and there's no one around. And he figures out fairly quickly that everyone who went outside to look at the comet the night before has gone blind. So now we have a world with carnivorous, mobile plants and the vast majority of the human population can no longer see. That's the first 5 pages of this book and away we go. So the rest of the book is just an unpacking of what happens when society collapses, but all the stuff of society doesn't. So a lot of disaster books and apocalyptic books, everything gets broken, like it's nuclear or there's a meteor or something. This is a world where everything is still intact. The only thing that has changed is that people can no longer see, which then fundamentally changes how society operates. And there's these plants that are walking around and can kill you. What's great about this book and books that were written in this time is that the point is not the big thing that happened. The point of the book is how people deal with the thing that happened and how society responds to the thing that happens. So it's far more character driven than a book like this would usually be because it's not just about there are these plants running around, they can kill you or everybody's blind. It's about how different kinds of people, different groups of people organize themselves, how they solve problems, how they deal with some of the challenges that come up because of what has happened. I don't want to give very much away because there's a lot that goes on here, but I will also say this. As I'm reading this book, remember, written in 1951, I realize Day of the Triffids basically sets up all zombie fiction that comes afterwards because the Triffids are essentially zombies, except they're plants. There are some scenes in this book that are beat for beat, scenes from The Walking Dead, scenes from 28 Days Later, scenes from other zombie films and TV shows and books. Like it's, I don't know how much of it's conscious, but this thing set up everything Romero did, everything Kirkman did. I mean, it is probably not the first zombie book, but even without being zombies, it is very much a front runner of zombie books. Yeah, Day of the Triffids by John Wyndham. It's a fantastic book. It's a great picture of kind of the way people were looking at the world and thinking about society in the early 50s, even if you aren't really interested in the more science fiction and horror aspects of it.
I think that sounds fantastic.
No, Grace, it's so good. I mean, I read so much of this stuff and I just kept thinking this is brilliantly written and it's interestingly done and it just has a lot to say, which is not true of the same kind of book that's written now.
So here's what I was going to say. I kind of redact it now, but the plant thing was kind of giving like Super Mario World a little bit. Like just what? Off the top of my head, I was thinking of like, yeah, that was the first thing that came to mind. And so I was kind of out at that point. But then you mentioned so many like very important zombie stories taking right. beats from this story, then I'm back to being interested. So I don't want to totally write it off as like, sounds like scary Super Mario. No, thank you.
I don't even know how you get there.
Because I'm thinking about the little red plant things, the Venus flytraps and Super Mario.
Okay. Yeah,
that was I just have to be honest. That was my very first thought was like, well, that's interesting.
It's more like Plants versus Zombies now.
When you compared them to zombies, I was back in. When I first heard sci-fi and plants that maybe kill people, I was like, I don't know. But you won me over in the end. It does sound interesting.
That's what I do.
And I would be interested to see, like, having consumed a lot of these like zombie franchises, what was pulled from this particular book.
Okay, so I've won you over, and now you have to read it.
You said it was short, right?
It is short. It is short. It's a quick read. And then thank me later.
Yeah, it sounds worth it.
All right, so let's shift gears a little bit. Hannah, tell us about a couple of books that you've read in the last month or so.
Not talking about fantasy anymore for me. Let's talk about horror. I read a really phenomenal horror book this month, and I read a pretty good horror book this month. So I'm going to tell you about both of them. We'll start with the really, really, really good one, and it is called Nestlings by Nat Cassidy. Horror fans are absolutely raving about him, and now I understand why. So Nestlings has been called like the modern Rosemary's Baby meets the modern Salem's Lot. So being given that description, obviously I needed to read this, right? Being huge fans of both of those previously mentioned works. So Nestlings is about a couple and their one-year-old baby. The couple's names are Anna and Reed, and they have had a pretty horrible, pretty traumatic past year of their lives. The birth of their first child did not go very well, actually left Anna paralyzed from the waist down. And so Anna is in a wheelchair and she is trying to take care of this infant. They've struggled financially. It's just been a very hard year, very down on their luck. And then it seems that their luck is turning around when they win this housing lottery and get to move into this very posh, very fancy apartment in this old, historical, very renowned apartment building in New York City. And so, there's a little bit of conflict about whether or not they're actually going to be able to move into the building because, again, Anna's in a wheelchair and they're going to be moving to a top floor penthouse type suite. But ultimately, they kind of take this as a sign of this is our turn of luck. Things are starting to look up for us. We're going to go ahead and take this apartment. Bad idea. Things start going absolutely bonkers nuts in this apartment. Lots of very mysterious, creepy things right off the bat start happening, revolving mostly around their baby, their one-year-old. And so this book very genuinely is scary. And I find myself not saying that as often as I used to, because the more you read horror, the right. more you just kind of see these things coming. I did not see a lot of these things coming. Some of the turns that this book takes are very, very scary. I would highly recommend you check the trigger warnings on this one if you're interested in reading it. There are some things that you might want to know going into it. I would not recommend this book for any new parents out there. If you have a baby, this one may not be the one for you. But as for me, this book really checked a lot of boxes. Nat Cassidy is a fantastic writer, and he comes up with some really wild concepts. So I would highly recommend Nestlings by Nat Cassidy.
I love Nat Cassidy so much.
Have you read his other, does he have one other or two other books?
It's one other full book. I just saw on Goodreads he has a novella that's about to come out.
Okay.
But Mary is his debut novel that he had been working on for like 25 years. Like, it was a very long time. And it's kind of a tome. It's huge. But it's so good.
What's your second book, Hannah?
Okay, so second book, also horror, but very, very different kind of horror. The second book is called The September House by Carissa Orlando. This book is really interesting. So it's about a woman and her husband. They're in their, I would say, kind of mid-50s, maybe late 50s. And they have finally gotten to purchase a house for the first time in their lives. So all these years they've been, you know, saving up, trying to find the quote unquote dream home. Their daughter is now off in college, in adult life. And so it's just the two of them. They finally purchase this, you know, gorgeous historical home. And couple years go by after living in this house, and they realize that it is very, very, very haunted, particularly in the month of September. So every year when the month of September rolls around, the hauntings begin. They range from things like the house bleeding to actual ghosts of people who have lived in the house in the past, who have died in the house in the past. And these ghosts will interact with the couple in different ways. Some of them are nice and pretty harmless. Some of them are less nice and less harmless. Now, the wife, she's kind of learned how to coexist with this situation. She's become friends even with some of the nice ghosts. She's willing to overlook one bad month a year if it means she can have this dream home, right? The husband is less down with what goes on in September. He's a little bit more haunted by the torment. And so this year, he has finally decided he's not going to put up with it. And so when September rolls around, he leaves and he begs the wife to come with him. She ultimately decides not to. She wants to stay in the house. Things get weird, though, when no one hears from the husband for a really long time. So the daughter starts to get pretty sketched out by the situation. Now, granted, the daughter knows nothing about the hauntings in the house, because if she did, she probably wouldn't let her parents live there, right? So the daughter calls her mom. Have you heard from dad? Nope, I haven't heard from him either. And so the daughter decides to visit this very haunted house to help her mom search for her dad. And thus we have our story. This book is interesting. It's pretty well written. I liked the characters. The mother-daughter dynamic was pretty interesting. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't call this the scariest book ever, except that there are some pretty scary concepts, but not for the reasons that you would think. And the horror kind of comes from a different direction than you think it's going to come from. So once again, I would highly recommend checking the trigger warnings on this book if you are interested in reading it. All around, I would say it's a pretty good horror novel. It was a quick read, a decent haunted house story, pretty good characters. If you're into that kind of thing, I do think you would like this book. I wasn't as floored by it as I was by Nestlings, but maybe just because I had just read Nestlings. So I think that that may have been a little bit of the problem for me. But that is The September House by Carissa Orlando.
That's another one I've seen everywhere. And because I'm a horror girly, I read horror pretty consistently, but I saw it too late, so I'm waiting till next September to read it because I have to.
I wish I had done that, given myself more of that atmosphere, read it around September, Halloween. I think maybe it would have been a different experience for me. All right, Grace, why don't you tell us about what you've been reading this last month?
Absolutely. So I didn't mean to, but all of my books kind of have a death connection. So I'm sorry for being a big old bummer here today. But I'm really excited to talk to you about these books because they're really good. They both made really brave choices that could have fallen flat, but they worked really well for me. But yeah, I've been in my sad book era is kind of how I've been wording it. So sad themes ahead. The first book I wanted to talk about is one that was recommended to me by one of my friends on Bookstagram, Kelly. I was several books behind on my end of the year reading goal. And she was like, hey, this is a quick one. You should try it out. And so I read it on December 31st. It's within 30 days. Nice. And this is The Swimmer by Julia Tsuka. It's only 192 pages, so it's a shorty, but it is so packed with emotions that it felt longer in the best way possible. So in The Swimmers, we start out learning about a public pool where a bunch of people regularly visit to get away from the stress of the real world. The first part of the story is told from a collective we perspective, and there are little notes about all of the swimmers' tendencies. So there's like, well, this person is really fast, and this person just uses the public showers. Or in the case of one of the swimmers, Alice, she has memory issues, so we help her out with her issues. So pretty soon into the book, all of the swimmers encounter a crack in the pool that closes it, and everyone has to go back to their normal lives. And this is where the perspective switches again, and we start to focus in on Alice. And she's the woman who had the memory issues, and now it's told through the perspective of her daughter as she declines without the stability of the pool. This book is probably one of the best books I read in all of 2023. And again, I picked it up on December 31st. I recommend it wholeheartedly. And I want to make sure that anybody who reads it has an entire box of tissues handy. it has some of the most beautiful prose I have ever read. And it mixes reality and humor and devastating concepts really well. It handled topics that I've had to DNF books over. In a way that I was highlighting sentences instead of putting it away. Atsuka just really handles all of the topics really beautifully, and I'm glad I was able to read it. Another aspect to it that I really thoroughly enjoyed, and this is sort of my like brave choice of this book, is that all of the books were told in different points of view than I'm used to reading. So like I said, the first part is a collective we perspective. So it feels like someone was showing me around and like, oh, well, don't go there. You'll slip.
Oh, that's cool.
Like it felt like that. And then once the book transitioned to the daughter's perspective, it was told entirely in the second person. So everything is in her shoe. Like you are feeling everything it says. It's like you experience blank. It was just such a cool stylistic choice, and it worked so well, and it will make you cry.
I love what you said about books that tackle difficult conversations, that engage things that are hard to think about for anybody, and particularly for people who may have faced some of that, but that do it in a way, one, that is unique and surprising, like you're talking about with the voices. But also, when those books are beautifully written, there's something about that that allows you to navigate it. Where when they're not written as well, you almost feel, I won't speak for anybody else, like it's oppressive in some way. But when the prose is beautiful, when the story is well told, there's just something about that that allows me to go along with things that might otherwise be hard to read about.
It really was. I like bought a physical copy so I could tab it up as soon as I finished. So yeah.
What's really incredible about that too is second person is like an incredibly intimate perspective to read from because it feels like it is you, you know, experiencing these things. And so for a book to be one, like written from that perspective, really bringing the reader in, and two, discussing some of these, you know, touchier topics, that's really, really impressive when that is done with that much poise and grace in a way that's really allowing the reader to experience that and not run away from it.
Mm-hmm.
What's your second book, Grace?
My second book is one that I kind of joked was going to become my entire personality after one chapter. And that is Gerardo Samano Cordova's debut novel, Monstrelio. So at the start of Monstrelio, we see characters Magos and Joseph, who have just lost their son, Santiago. And in a super of grief, Magos takes a piece of her son's lung in order to have something that reminds her of him. She goes back home and she learns about a folktale where people have fed organs of their loved ones and they've grown into a new person. And she's like, sure, I'll try that. Pretty soon, Santiago's lung becomes sentient and turns into a little small creature called Monstrelio, who's a little bit of a rascal, but it's a very interesting perspective here. But after a few years, Monstrelio begins to look a little bit more like Santiago, their lost son. And others begin to sort of expect him to behave more like a human being instead of the monster that he was whenever he was created. So the concept of this story sounds silly and like Guillermo del Toro, like kind of vibes, but oh my goodness, it is my favorite work of fiction I've read so far this year. I know we're still in January, but it was beautiful. It's told through four different perspectives: the mother, Magos, the family friend, Lena, the father, Joseph, and then lastly, through Monstrelio's perspective, as he's a near adult, now going by M. Each perspective really dives into those characters themselves so that readers can get to know them on an individual level and understand why they want to help Monstrelio thrive. It's emotional, it's weird, it's funny, and it's ultimately really heartwarming as we get a glimpse of our own expectations of humanity. So while this has been marketed as a horror novel, I felt like this was a lot more of a literary work with horror elements to it. There's not a whole lot of graphic horror or anything like that. It's really that first chapter that is just a little rough. There were so many elements of what love looks like in friendships and romantic relationships and through your advocates. And it explored the effects of grief experienced by your family and friends and how ultimately we can't stop people from being themselves. And the ending just was one of the more beautiful endings to a book that I have personally ever read. Cordova made really big choices for a debut novel, and I feel like it paid off really well. And I feel lucky to have read this. And so if you've read it and you love it, find me on Instagram and I will gush and I will send you so many voice memos of stammering over how much I love this book.
Oh, it sounds so good. I'm a huge Frankenstein fan, and pretty much anything that kind of takes those Frankenstein tropes but then takes it in a different direction, I'm always really, really into, which sometimes is that kind of Guillermo del Toro, like, you know, let's just patch something together and create a monster. But when it has a more positive spin about humanity and like social constructs to it, I think that that's such a beautiful thing to create. Oh, I've got to read this. It's unfortunate that sometimes the branding of books keeps it from landing in the actual correct hands of the actual correct readers.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely, I think, got a little bit genre'd a little bit. Definitely a literary piece of fiction.
Well, that's such a hard thing. And I've had this conversation with authors that I interview. We are in this world where everything has to fit in a category and it has to slot in so that publishing houses know how to market it, bookstores know where to put it. And one of the things I love about literati that we were talking about earlier is that shelf that is stories that define genre, that define classifications, where it's just, it's a great story, but it has a lot of these different kinds of elements in it. And so you just read it for what it is and not as a horror novel or as a literary, you know, whatever. You just read it as a story that is worth reading.
It's my favorite shelf at Literati.
There's a lot of us like that, I think.
All right. And Jay, what about you?
Well, I'm going to take us away from the sad themes a little bit.
Good.
And move more towards almost ridiculous. I think we may actually be there. My first book is called Starter Villain. It's by John Scalzi, who I have talked about on here many times before. Scalzi is one of my favorite authors. He's a science fiction guy predominantly. But one of the things that's brilliant about him is that he can write in a lot of different kinds of genres that still fit within the science fiction, speculative fiction, but go in 1,000 different directions. So he has huge space operas like Old Man's War, but he also has little books like this that are, they're funny, they're quick, and they're just stories that clearly he had on his mind and wanted to tell. And he talks about this book. This is his COVID novel. So he wrote it during COVID when he was basically trapped in his house with his cats. And cats play a pretty significant role in the book Starter Villain. So quickly, it's about a guy named Charlie who's down on his luck. He is divorced. He is a substitute teacher. He's living in his father's house that was given to him when his father passed away. And he's kind of at the end of his rope when he finds out that his uncle, who he's been estranged from for decades, has passed away. Now, his uncle is very wealthy. And so a representative of his uncle shows up at his doorstep and says, "Your uncle wants you to go stand for him at his funeral." So Charlie agrees to go do that. He goes and he stands at the funeral, and through a series of both hilarious and surprising events that take place at the funeral that I will not spoil because they're great, Charlie finds out there's more to his uncle than he realized, and he gets thrust into the world of supervillains who use economics and technology to basically bend the world to their will. And from there, it just takes off, and it is nuts. It's funny. It's but it's not like silly. And I think that's the difference. Like, there's a ton of humor, but it doesn't get to silly. It's an adventure story. It really is kind of like a James Bond kind of thing if there's no real hero. You know, he's just kind of bumbling through this thing as he's dealing with all these supervillains. There are cats that can communicate. There are dolphins that can communicate. There are whales that can communicate. It's a little bit nutty, but it's so much fun. And I don't laugh a lot in books, although I do find myself laughing a lot in his stuff. I was laughing through this thing, and just, it's surprising. If you're familiar with Scalzi's stuff, this book does to Bond villains what Red Shirts did to Star Trek. Like, it just kind of takes kind of a central piece of a genre or a intellectual property kind of thing and runs wild with it. So it's a blast. It's shown up everywhere. It was one of the top books on Goodreads for science fiction last year. It's a ton of fun. But that's Starter Villain by John Scalzi.
That one sounds really good. One of my friends was reading it, and ironically enough, one of her cats got to it and destroyed her copy. And she was like, "I feel like this is accurate."
Well, the cat was just afraid that it was letting in on secrets that we didn't need to know about.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Maybe we should be watching that cat a little bit more closely.
My second book, then, going in a very different direction, is Chain Gang All-Stars by Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. Oh, wow, this book. It's on the everybody's best of list for 2023, and rightly so. It is brilliantly written. It is smart. It is emotional. And it just has a ton to say, in addition to being a really, really compelling story. Chain Gang All-Stars, it's near future speculative fiction that is part Gladiator, part reality television, and part Shawshank Redemption. So it imagines a future where incarcerated folks who have more than a 25-year sentence are allowed to join the Criminal Action Penal Entertainment Program, also known as hard action sports, which are basically death matches, that they can sign up to go into an arena against another prisoner in this program, and one of them doesn't leave. And if they can survive in this arena, in this program for 3 years, then they are free. They basically earn their freedom through these gladiator-type events. So the book centers around one of these prisoners, her name's Loretta Thirlwall, who is coming up on the last couple of fights of her quote-unquote career so that then she can be let go. And she has, they set these prisoners in almost families. Like, they're groups of them that travel together. And so she is over this group because she's kind of the senior gladiator, the senior battler in that group. And so you have this family element among those folks. You have relationship between she and another one of the women that are a part of this group, who's also a very successful gladiator. And then you have this, so you have these events that are televised, and they're kind of the central entertainment in the sports world now. But they also have this reality TV element where, as these families or these groups are moving from one event to the next, they basically have cameras on them 24/7. And that is also beamed into everyone's living room. And so you have people watching these gladiators as humans, as they interact with each other, as they hurt, as they tell their stories, as they have friendships and relationships with each other, which then leads to this burgeoning movement to treat them as humans and to end the hard action sports, because people that the crowds have fallen in love with, half of them die. So you've got all of these different things going on. And in the midst of the story that's being told about Thirlwore and kind of the end of her career, you have conversations about race. You have conversations about incarceration and kind of that whole world. You have conversations about found family and what that looks like, and, you know, choosing to take care of the people that are around you, whether you completely agree with and get them or not. There's conversations about love, about forgiveness. There's just so much to this book. It would be easy to write it off as, well, this is just gladiators, but there's so much more to it. And for a debut novel, it is masterfully done, beautifully written. And again, we've, you know, talked about trigger warnings. It's violent because you're talking about prisoners and death matches. So you've got to be aware of that going in. But if you can handle a little bit of that, and it's not over the top, it is so worth reading. I can't recommend Chang'an All-Stars enough.
I don't know if you could hear my pen clicking in the background while you were talking, but I was writing it down. Yeah, I've got to read it. What's interesting is I've kind of seen this book everywhere, but knew very little about it.
Right.
Wow, it sounds good. That concept is fantastic. And to use a concept like that to talk about things like race and, I mean, wow, that sounds really incredible. And I would not have guessed that this was a debut novel, to be tackling something like that on a debut.
Right, to go this big.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Fantastic book. I'm like you, I had seen it everywhere and was kind of interested in it. It was on my list, but it kept getting pushed back and pushed back. And then Martha Steele, who does the Three Book Girls podcast, was talking about it was one of the best books she'd read this year. And that kind of pushed me over the edge to pick it up and take a look at it. And wow. Okay, so it's backlist pick time. We're going to shift gears one more time. Remember, this is a book that's at least 5 years old, and we made it easy this time for it to be 5 years old, because at the beginning of a new year, we decided to go with a book that was written in the year each of us was born. Mine will be slightly older than Grace's and Hannah's. Let's do this in reverse chronological order. How's that? So Hannah, I think you're up first.
I believe that is me. Okay. So, I was born in the year 1998. I want to say shout out to Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. That book also came out the year I was born, but I feel like I talk about Harry Potter as much, if not more, than I talk about Taylor Swift. And we just need to chill out on bandwagons every so often. So,
wow.
With that being said, I am going to talk about Holes by Lewis Satcher. Holes came out in 1998. It is a fantastic book and a really, really unique book at that too. So to wildly oversimplify it, the book follows our main character named Stanley. And Stanley's great-grandfather was cursed. Okay. He didn't fulfill something that he was supposed to in his lifetime. And so a curse was put on this family. And so Stanley's one of those just kind of like down on his luck kids, ends up in a bummer situation where he is accused of a crime that he did not commit, but he goes down for it and he is put in a juvenile detention. And rather than being put in a cell kind of juvie situation, he is sent to this camp. This is a camp for juvenile delinquents where they are basically tasked with digging holes all day, every day. And at the beginning of the story, we don't really know why they're doing this. We just know that this is what they're doing. We come to find out that the warden at this camp believes that there is some kind of buried treasure on the campgrounds. And so they're actually utilizing these juveniles to hopefully dig up the treasure. And we learn throughout the story the background behind why they believe treasure to be there, how that is tied with different things that Stanley is connected to. This book is just really interesting. It's very, very well written. It has some funny moments. It's got, you know, a little bit of a mystery going on. It's really, really fun, though. It's lots of like stories within the story, little things that are woven within the main plot line. It's got fun characters. And overall, it's a pretty light read, pretty like just comical, fun, interesting. It's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly what this book is quite about, except that it's about a lot of different kinds of things, if that makes any sense at all. So that is Holes by Lewis Satcher.
A classic. So good.
So many great books came out in 1998. I actually got to like choose from a solid handful of really great books. So 1998 was a good year.
All right, Grace, you're up.
Yeah, so... I won't lie, this was a tricky backlist prompt for me. As soon as Jay said it to me, I was like, oh, wow. I've read tons of books written in the 90s, but had completely missed anything written in 1994 when I was born. And I desperately wanted to cheat and be like, Jurassic Park, like somehow, like it came out in 90. But I wanted the challenge, so I took it. For me, I tend to equate the mid-90s with like R.L. Stein and like campy horror and like Fear Street and Goosebumps. And so I was trying to look around to find something published again in 94 that I could read, and realized that The Midnight Club by Christopher Pike was published in February of 1994. And it felt like fate. This wasn't just published in 94, but I found out that Christopher Pike and I share a birthday. So all of it came together. So the concept of The Midnight Club is that a group of teenagers are living at Rotterdam Home, which is a hospice for teens to die peacefully of illnesses. In Rotterdam, there's a group of five kids who meet at midnight to share made-up stories with one another. And we are predominantly following Ilonka, who is a cancer patient who hopes that her herbal remedies will help her tumor shrink, and also feels a very deep connection with one of the other members of the club named Kevin, almost as if she knew him in another life. The stories that they tell at midnight are very different. Some of them feel like straight out of an action movie, and others are very thought-provoking and spiritual. I'm going to stop the summarizing here because it is a very short little book, and anything else will give everything else away about the story. So it's another shorter one that packs a punch. While the behaviors of the characters definitely feel like they are teenagers, Pike really created an environment full of depth and respect that really translates well into those situations. It was a much more spiritual book than I was expecting it to be, but it makes sense as people are coming to the end of their lives. It was a lot just deeper and more emotional, and just a really good look at accepting your own mortality. And overall, I really enjoyed it. And I definitely see why Mike Flanagan, of all people, was compelled to turn it into a TV show, because that man loves people's emotions. And so I was just like reading it, and I was like, I feel like if I could recommend it to anyone, it would be any teenager that has been told they have an old soul. Like it just feels like the perfect combination for them.
I loved that book. It's been forever since I've read it. But I remember thinking at the time that, you know, it was one of those that going into it, I was ready for it to be really sad, because that's such a sad premise, teenagers who are dying, you know? And yet there were lots of uplifting messages that you could pull, like, take away from it. And so, like, yes, it was sad, but also there was a lot of positive in it too. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, really heartwarming at the same time. Very, very deep, very, very not scary, very like nothing what I had been expecting. It was wonderful.
All right, Dad, let's hear your backlist pick.
Well, I have to go back a little bit further than the 90s and the 80s and to the very beginning of the 70s. A ton of great books came out in 1970, but there is one that I probably read early, either late junior high, early high school, that set me on a path with this author that has taken me a lot of places. The book's called Ringworld by a guy named Larry Niven. Niven is one of the most prolific and most decorated science fiction authors of the 60s through the 2010s. I mean, this guy had a massive career, wrote with a lot of different people, created some unbelievable worlds and stories that I just love. Ringworld is about a crew that has been sent on an expedition to explore a vessel called Ringworld that is the size of the Earth's orbit. So for the nerds in the room, or at least for me, that's 584.3 million miles in circumference and 1 million miles across. This thing is big. And they are sent to explore and find out what it is, what it's about. Is it a threat? And as they are approaching it, they get attacked by the vessel's anti-asteroid protection system, and their ship is damaged and they crash on Ringworld to find that the civilization that built it has collapsed. And so there's lots that's still intact, but there are very few people. A lot of the buildings and the different things that have been created are in ruins or beginning to fall apart. Some of it's kind of grown over and become wild, where clearly it was gardens or, you know, agriculture before. And from there, it basically turns into an adventure story where they are traversing this massive landscape to find parts and to find the things that they need to fix their ship and be able to leave again. In the meantime, they begin to find out what happened that caused the civilization to collapse. And they also begin to find out about each other. So the four people on this expedition are all different species. They're different alien races, and there's one human. They begin to find more things about each other, about their races, about some of the interactions that have taken place, the wars that have been fought. So there's conflict there. There's conflict in surviving the environment. But it's also one of the things that Niven was known for. He's a hard science fiction guy, but creates technologies and scenarios that both embrace hard sci-fi, but are incredibly accessible to somebody who doesn't care that the orbit of the Earth around the sun is 584.3 million miles. Makes these books very accessible. It's not for everybody. I mean, it's a hard science fiction novel from 1970 about a gigantic ship that people are traversing. But if you are interested in science fiction at all, Niven is godfather in some ways to what science fiction became through the 2010s and what we begin to see now in some of the space opera that's being written. Lots of space-oriented television shows, films, and novels can be traced back to the work that he did. Ringworld spawned 8 novels and an attempt at a video game. But at the heart of it, it is an adventure story, and it is a story about a group of people trying to survive in a hostile environment. And so even if you're not so much into the science fiction part of it and the spaceships and the different characters, if you're interested in adventure stories, this may introduce you to a world that you'll be really, really interested in, because it is incredibly well written. It's incredibly interesting. And I will say that reading up on this again, because it's been decades since I've read Ringworld, made me want to go back and pick it back up again.
My partner's favorite genre to read is science fiction and action, and this is just right up his alley. I'm probably going to mention it. He's going to say, I've read it. But I'm definitely, I took a note to tell him about it, because that sounds right up his alley, 100%.
That's so great. It's so great. All right. Well, that's it for this edition of Your Next Great Read. Grace, thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me again. I've had so much fun.
So before we go, tell folks again how they can find you and If Books Could Thrill Book Club.
Yeah, so you can find If Books Could Thrill at If Books Could Thrill OKC on Instagram. And we have all of our RSVPs for meetings and our group Discord and links in our bio. You can also find our bookmarks that have a little spot to fill in your star rating for each of our books at Literati Press and the Floating Bookshop and wherever else I happen to visit when I'm at a local bookstore. You can find me at Grace Evelyn Reads on Instagram, and all of my reviews are in my 2024 books highlights.
Awesome. And we'll make sure all that's linked up so that you can find Grace and the book club and go check out what they're doing. It's book clubs are so much fun. And so I love that we talk about this all the time. We have this gift in Oklahoma City of all these fantastic bookstores, and out of these fantastic bookstores have grown all these incredible book clubs that are so different and varied. And yet every one of them is just really cool. So I'm glad you're doing it, Grace. And I'm guessing you will probably see Hannah there in the not too distant future.
Yeah, you see me on the RSVPs very soon.
Oh, good. We would love to have you.
Hannah, great stuff as always.
As always.
Remember, folks, you can find links to all the books we've talked about in the show notes and at okiebookcast.com/nextread. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe to the Bookcast newsletter for more news and recommendations straight to your inbox every month. We'll be back next month with more books and another great guest. So until then,
go find something good to read.